Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Well, good afternoon and welcome back to another exciting episode of Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with always the mostest, the radio chick, along with my debonair, my suave, my sophisticated version of Cary Grant on the radio, Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Mikey.
Hello, Annie. Welcome, everybody. I am very glad to be here. I'm not really sure. Is this our last show of the year?
This is our last show of the year. Yes, it is.
Wow. Well, it doesn't really matter because we know at midnight it's all over. Thank you very much for allowing me to co-host your wonderful show. And I hope to see you and Yanni at 1201 up in heaven. I'll introduce you
actually,
to the end of the world.
It was 1201 this morning that the
Mayan
calendar.
Well, that guy ran out of T-shirts. We're not even going to get into that discussion. But, oh, boy. Annie, you and I are in the wrong business. I have a million T-shirts. But anyway, it's great. You know, it is amazing. I remember it always hits me in the head sometime right early spring or maybe a little bit before when you mentioned a date has been set for the Lieutenant Dan weekend. And I always think that's so far away. And then before you know it, the weekend is upon us. And before we know it, here it is, the 21st of December, and our basically our swan song for the rest of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to welcome everyone to the chat room. I want to remind everyone that's listening in or in the chat room, you have until January 1st to join our brand new website, southernsense.webs.com, and be automatically entered to win our Screaming Eagle tote bag. I personally designed the tote bag. I did the logo. So, hey, you get a little bit of my artwork in your home. So, you know, enter onto our website. We've had a lot of people starting to join up this past week. So,
yeah, hey, a couple of my friends from Facebook said they signed up. And let me tell everyone something. Annie is the type of person who don't do anything half-assed. This bag is designed good. You can bet it could probably carry Roseanne Barr in it. But anyway, I mean, it's very, very cool. Annie, you remind me of my brother. Everything's first class.
Well, I'm glad you said Roseanne Barr and not Michael Moore.
Speaking of that, I think Roseanne's running for president. Or no, not Roseanne announced she's running for, it must be a governor.
Well, she did run for president this past election cycle. Yeah.
So did I. Anyway. we do have a great guest, and afterwards Jermaine's going to call in, and afterwards we're going to play some clips just on some basic topics. But as always, I do want to say thank you. I very, very much enjoy this show, very much, and it's great to be able to co-host. The numbers are beyond overwhelming, and 95% of it is because of you. Also, another announcement too. Wait a minute, I have to read this. I got word from Mr. Kennedy on the 4th of January, no, the 5th of January, wait a minute, on the 4th of January of 2013, the court will hear him and several other people who are asking for like a stay of execution on the Obama care regarding the religious aspect of the birth control. There are several entities into there, you know, that sterilization, birth control, whatever.
Right, and we're going to be talking about that. That's on my list for being discussed today with our guest, Andrew Malcolm of Investors Business Daily. I always get this backwards. I always want to say Business Investors. No, Investors Business Daily. Matter of fact, he started calling early, and I told him to call back in about 10, 15 minutes. So we know we've got an exciting guest today. We've got a lot on the agenda here. I mean, we've got a heck of a lot. But I want to get into this dedication. And you were mentioning January 4th. January 4th, our guest is going to be former CIA operative and now Fox News contributor Mike Baker is going to be on. And the following show after that, Friday, we've got Adam Makos, who wrote an absolutely phenomenal book, and Colin Heaton, who has been a past guest of ours a couple of times, did the research for the book, and I spoke to him this afternoon just before we went on the air, and he's going to be joining Andrew Makos on that show on the 8th. So we've got shows lining up already for next year. And, you know, I got to thank everyone out there, though, because we're coming up to close to 250,000 downloads. And the majority of those downloads have been within the last 6 months. So our audience is growing, and the show does not go by when we're not in close to 1,000 or more, between 1,000 to, I think our top was 40,000 in a single episode. So, I mean, hey, we're here and we're here to stay.
Yeah, those are astronomical numbers. I had talked to John. Oh, I had to call BTR but as always, you always have a problem. And commenting for both shows, Conservative Primetime and our show, just like these are changes that they haven't seen. I mean, they just don't occur. So, I mean, that's a lot of that's due to you, Annie. Also, here's some outstanding news. I'm asking John Crawford to join us in late January or early February. They have begun, the Michigan Fair Tax have begun a petition drive to get it on the ballot for 2013 to go into effect at 2014. So they have started an actual petition drive. A lot of the Rhino Republicans jumped ship, so the good conservative Tea Partiers moved in, and you know how well they work. I mean, they're aggressive. So, anyway, with that being said, we're going to go ahead and do dedication. I think I see Sarge calling in, too. Oh, Lord, this show going to be another drag down. We're going to leave the year with a fine style.
All right, well, I know because this is our last show of the year before we go into next year. For those who listen, know each show is started off with a dedication to a fallen hero. We owe them so much, and this is the least we can do to give them homage. So, Mike, if you pull up the Navy hymn, which I believe is the first audio clip on the list, Eternal Father.
It is. All right. It is playing.
This is dedicated to Petty Officer Kevin Ebert. As Americans who owe those who have given their lives in defense of our nation, today, we not only honor the ultimate sacrifice made by Kevin Ebert, but celebrate the life he led. U.S. Navy SEAL and Petty Officer First Class Kevin Ebert, 32, was an Attica native with a UC Santa Cruz bachelor's degree in music and a passion for reading. The husband and son, who loved rafting and great outdoors, was planning upon return from his second deployment in Afghanistan early next year to complete his medical training in medical school, becoming a physician, and eventually going back overseas with his wife to work in clinics around the world. Ebert, killed in action on November 24th of this year while supporting operation in Uzbekistan province, Afghanistan, as part of Operation Enduring Freedom, was assigned to Naval Special Warfare Unit Group 2 in Virginia Beach, Virginia, where he and his wife Ursula married on December 31st, 2011, and had recently purchased their first home. Remembered by his commander, Captain Robert Smith, as a courageous patriot who selflessly answered our nation's call to defend freedom and protect us from terrorism. Ebert was also honored by California Governor Jerry Brown, who ordered flags flown at half-staff over the state capitol in Sacramento. Hundreds of friends, family, and soldiers gathered to remember Kevin Ebert, known for his dedication to the people, values, and pursuits that he loved. Ebert was passionate about art, music, ultimate frisbee, and the outdoors. He graduated from Attica High School in 1998, earned a bachelor's degree in music from University of Santa Cruz, and enlisted in the Navy in 2006. Gathered on a crisp Sunday afternoon at Humboldt State University, friends and family members shared thoughts from a stage decorated with flowers, an acoustic guitar, and photos of the 32-year-old Ebert, a Navy SEAL. For me, Kevin was a benchmark of what someone could do if they dedicated themselves, Ebert, longtime friend Josh Krebs said. He was incredibly successful in everything he did. Silas Toms, another friend from high school and college, said Ebert decided at one point early at UC Santa Cruz that he would take up the guitar. When he was dedicated and loved something, it became his life, Toms said. Toms, his roommate at the time, said Ebert quickly became an accomplished guitar player. Despite hours of a ticking metronome in their shared room, something that would drive Toms crazy, Toms said he came to realize that Ebert's dedication was something to learn from. He was teaching me lessons, Toms said. I am just most sad that he can't teach me any more lessons. Tom said that after Ebert's father, who was also a Navy SEAL, died, he felt an appreciation for his father's service in the Navy that led him to dedicate his life to service. Several of Ebert's fellow Navy SEALs spoke at the memorial, describing a man who prospered under pressure and kept his cool in the most difficult situations. They told stories of Ebert going above and beyond the duties of his service and always being there for fellow SEAL teammates. They said Ebert took every detail seriously, earning him the nickname Ice Cold Kevin. His loyalty and friendship also inspired his teammates. Ebert earned the Purple Heart and 2 Bronze Stars in his 2 tours in Afghanistan, where his teammates said he selflessly left cover to provide medical aid to fellow soldiers during grenade and firearm attacks. Ebert's mother, Charlie Jordan, said that his dedication was a common thread appreciated by family, friends, and teammates. He was a caring, focused individual from the time he was born, she told community members, family, and friends who gathered. Many of you helped him find his values. Ebert's wife, Ursula Ebert, cheerfully remembered the man she married in 2011. He was a constant source of inspiration and fascination for me, she said. I will honor your life by making the most of mine. Thank you, Kevin. Our thoughts and prayers are with your family and friends. And to this and to all men who serve our nation and who give the ultimate sacrifice, we will now dedicate this song, My Name is America, by Todd Allen Herredine. You can find it up on YouTube, and download it for free. My Name is America by Todd Allen Harrington. Thank you to our brave men and women.
I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger. And I'll rise up from the flames, and I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America, don't tread on me. America is my name. My strength was not taken from others, others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up.
My Name is America by Todd Allen Harrington, and I get to talk to him, shake his hand next week. He's been a guest on our show a couple of times this past year, and I will finally meet him face-to-face next month at the South Carolina Tea Party Convention. Whew. Now, Mike, we got an excellent guest, and we got a lot lined up on our plate today, so shall we welcome him aboard?
I think we shall.
Okay, he is a columnist, columnist from Investors Business Daily, formerly of the LA Times. Welcome aboard, Andrew Malcolm.
Well, thank you very much, both of you, for having me on. What an impossible portion of the program to follow, I must say. Very, very moving. You guys are wonderful to do that.
Oh, thank you. And I'm glad we played Todd Allen's song, because every time I have to mute my mic because I start crying towards the end.
It is a wonderful song, isn't it?
Yeah. And I just tumbled over him on the internet one day, and I called him up, and he answers his phone directly. It's not an answering machine or a service or an agency. And he's as down to earth as that song is. And we're going to have him back on.
I saw him back in 2010. He sang at a Sarah Palin rally, and was very moving. He's quite good. I hope he gets more widely recognized thanks to your exposure.
Well, I hope so. I really do hope so. So tell us a little bit about yourself. You were formerly with the LA Times.
Well, that was part of my life. I grew up in the Midwest and went to university at Northwestern, studied journalism and political science, and then I worked for 26 years at the New York Times as a foreign correspondent, national correspondent, and editor and columnist. And then I went into government in 1993, working as the director of communications for the governor in Montana, Governor Mark Roscoe. And then in 1999, he said he traded me to Texas for two future draft choices, and I went down to work for Governor George W. Bush for his first campaign, and mainly as Laura Bush's press secretary. And then I went to the LA Times after Governor Bush became President Bush, and worked there until last year when Investors Business Daily came over and said, we'd like you to write your national politics column on our website. So that's where I am now. And it's a great bunch of people. I highly recommend it to your listeners. And I can say this because I don't write the editorials, but the editorials, I think, are rightly renowned across America for saying things that about politics that other people think but are afraid to say. They're very candid, very strong, perhaps needless to say, have a jaundiced view of the current administration. So, but they're very thoughtful and documented, very carefully documented. So, and that part of the website is open, as is my column. It's investors.com/AndrewMalcolm, MALCOLM. And that's where I am, and you can jump over to the...
I posted that in the chat room for you, and
thank you.
I'm a huge Sopranos fan, so I love today's article.
Oh, great. Well, that's wonderful. Well, we also have a podcast over there, and if people find themselves having listened to every one of your programs, they can come over. Melissa Cloutier is a blogger, a conservative blogger in Texas, and I do a weekly podcast there. And we had one this week that dealt with Newtown. And I recommend this not because I was involved in it, but it's number 88 over there, but because of the guest we had, Eugene Kennedy, who's a psychology professor. He's 85 years old, an author, former priest, raconteur, grandfather, and good friend, who provided about 35 or 40 minutes of the most profound thinking about Newtown. Not so much about the event itself, but about how each one of us as humans can handle it when we are confronted with such overpowering grief and shock at the innocence snatched away by violence. I have to say, it changed my way of thinking in life. And I know Gene for a long time, but he was talking about love always brings suffering, but without love, you can't really have life. So it was very helpful in terms of how to handle these things. Unfortunately, I imagine there will be other sad incidents in our national life. So I really recommend people listen to it. It gives you a new way of thinking from a very wise man. But here we are today to talk about anything you want to talk about.
Yeah, it's amazing that you mentioned Mr. Kennedy, because when you made the statement that you don't know life unless you have loved and suffered. I think the major problem is that the touchy-feely attitude that is so prevalent now, where you end up going into a baseball game and neither side wins or loses, is basically what's wrong. We're not teaching our kids the reality of life.
Yeah.
And to separate reality from the fictional life they live through the media, these video games and things like that, it's being, the lines are now blurred, and now they're not understanding truth versus fiction.
Right. Well, you know, the most important job I think we have in life is not one we get paid for, but it's one that is parenting. And I've gone through it four times. I wouldn't give up a second of it, happy and sad. The difference I see, and this is what actually Gene Kennedy helped me understand, is that we all want to protect our children. And the power of this, the awful power of this Newtown incident, comes from the fact that these children literally were in their first year away from their parents. Parents don't want to free their children to go into the world because the parents know there are dangers there. But they did, and they gave them to the school, and then so many of them were snatched away. It's a parent's worst nightmare that they weren't there, couldn't be there, and even if they were there, they couldn't have done anything to protect their child. And now, of course, they're forced to live with that. So this is one reason why it resonates so much. But, you know, a lot of parents in modern life, it seems to me, raise their children to be friends, not to be children. And we lived in a community, actually in Connecticut, some years ago, where, for instance, the police raided a beach keg party for underage drinking. And our son was not involved, but what happened, I was talking with the local police chief, what happened was that when the parents were called that their children were down at the station, they came down, and most of the parents were angry that the police were bothering the kids. the police were not shocked because they go through this all the time. It's a perverse reaction, like when the police show up to protect an abused spouse and the spouse starts attacking the police. It's a perverse human emotion, but these parents were sticking up for their children who had violated the law instead of saying, I'm going to take care of this at home, officer, that's for sure. Because they wanted to be their child's friend. And you can't be raised to face the rigors of life by friends. You have to be raised by people who've been there, parents. And I know my father, you told the petty officer's powerful story there, and you told it as a story. And many of us learned from that. My father told a lot of stories about life. You know, we all learn from lectures. The one thing that, I mean, we don't learn from lectures, we learn from stories. The one thing that unites people, no matter what their language, religion, or lack of religion is stories. There are about, in my thinking, there are about 14 or 15 stories in all of human history. You know, there's David and Goliath, and then that comes through history and becomes Rocky. You know, there's Cinderella, and that comes through history and becomes My Fair Lady and Pretty Woman and others like it. So my father taught me a lot about life through stories, things that had happened to him. Because they were stories, I listened closely, and then he leaves it to you, a parent does, or she does, to draw the lesson from it. And it sort of honors the youngster's intelligence that they can figure it out. If you tell stories with the same morality lessons over and over enough, eventually even children get it.
Yeah, I think that's very, very true, because I enjoy history. I enjoy, you know, a lot of varied subjects. And one of the things I've always been fascinated with is mythology and
how
different mythologies, whether it's Norse, Greek, Roman, Japanese, Chinese, how there's always a central theme that is very similar in all of the stories. Because you mentioned My Fair Lady, which actually goes back to myth, Greek mythology of Galatia,
right.
The story of
mm-hmm.
Galatia and that. And a lot of these stories, the same story is just retold, but there's also a message in each one of the stories, a message of goodness, of hope, of redemption. And these are things we're not teaching kids. I mean, out of every tragedy, there is a redemption. You know, 9/11 had the redemption of a nation uniting as one to help each other. You know, the same story is coming out of, unfortunately, Newton. Out of
You're absolutely right. And one of the things that Professor Kennedy, the points that he makes on this podcast is that at 9/11, we always draw the awful lessons about evil and terrorism, but one of the lessons is of love. At the very moment that so many of those people were confronting a certain death, they reached out by telephone to call their loved ones and leave loving messages on the answering machine. And this is what he was talking about. Without love, or with love, you have inevitably suffering, but without both, you don't have life. And he talked too about Greek mythology, and one of the themes in Greek mythology, of course, is a journey that you leave home, as these youngsters left home to go to kindergarten, and you go into this journey, and there are many perils, and that you confront along the way, and when you're done with the journey, then you have learned and you have lived. You know, interesting, he was pointing out that the word freedom, which these parents had given their children to go to school, to have the freedom to go to school on their own, even though the parents were scared to death. The word freedom comes from a German word, I think it's Freisia, and that literally means to make safe, to make a place safe for family or loved ones. So it's interesting that the sense that we have of freedom, of giving something freedom that goes into danger, actually the root word definition is making safety out of giving freedom. So a very powerful lesson. As I say, I recommend it because I learned so much from it. I've been in journalism for more than four decades, and it's one of the top two or three interviews I have ever done that I go away with saying I'm going to be thinking about this for a very long time.
All right, we've got some callers coming in.
Oh, and great, okay.
All right, let me bring this first one on. Area code 315, you're on the air live with Southern Sense. To whom am I speaking?
Hi, this is Phil Elmore.
I'm sorry?
This is Phil Elmore.
Oh, hi, Phil. How are you doing?
Good.
You have written... My computer screen's going a little nuts on me. You wrote a fantastic editorial which left me laughing, and it had to do with the aftermath of the Newton. And, Andrew, I don't know if you know Phil Elmore. He's also another columnist on another online blog paper. I'm sorry, Phil, which one are you with?
WorldNet Daily.
WorldNet Daily. Okay, I was going to get that backwards. Where now Dick's Sporting Goods has taken off the shelves all of their hunting rifles.
Oh.
And he made a phone call to Dick's Sporting Goods. And I let Phil tell the story because I was hysterical reading this.
Well, I was, obviously the first thing anyone thinks when they hear about the shooting, I was at lunch that day, and in the morning they'd said, well, there's been a shooting in Connecticut. We think someone's been shot at a school. A horrible incident, but not the sort of thing that causes your world to grind to a halt, given how much violence there is out there. I came back from lunch to reports that it was, you know, over 20 children in a school, and it was just horrifying. And so everyone's first thought is, what a senseless atrocity something like that is. Then all of a sudden, not hours later, first our president and then various other politicians and other activist groups are trying to exploit this tragedy to further an agenda that they've always had, which is gun control and civilian disarmament and, you know, taking guns away from people because they just can't be trusted. Apparently, the safest world is one in which only criminals have guns. So
yeah.
that was that was not unexpected. It was bad, but it was not unexpected. Those things always happen. The shortest interval yet measured by man in terms of chronology is the amount of time it takes for a Democrat politician to rush to a news camera when someone has shot someone else so that they can exploit that tragedy for gain. But then people that should have known better, people that are you know, retailers who cater to the very culture to which I subscribe, you know, the armed, prepared citizens, companies like Dick's Sporting Goods and Cheaper Than Dirt, which is an internet retailer from whom I've purchased many, many times, started saying weird things. They started saying, oh, we're suspending sales. Some of them even went through the folly of claiming that this was temporary of certain types of weapons. And without saying it, the parenthetical addenda there is, which happen to be politically incorrect right now. And everyone who's read my column about my phone call to Dick's Sporting Goods has said, well, I shouldn't say everyone. A few of the responses have been, well, you know, they have the right to carry whatever they want. Well, yes, that's true. But when you make your inventory decisions based not on what is profitable to your company, but based on what is all of a sudden politically incorrect, not even illegal, then you are betraying your customer base. You cannot be a firearms retailer and not support firearms rights. And we've seen fallout like this happen before. I want to say it was Smith & Wesson that tried to cut a deal with the Clinton administration many years ago in an effort to forestall further regulations leveled at them. And gun owners took years to forgive Smith & Wesson, even after the company's ownership changed hands. The owner of the Leatherman Multi-Tool Company made the mistake of endorsing John Kerry, and people were calling for a boycott on Leatherman for quite some time after that, although that doesn't seem to have done them any real harm. So Dick's made this announcement, and I was so furious at the thought that law-abiding gun owners are being treated like criminals that I made a phone call to my local Dick's Sporting Goods, and I asked for the firearms counter, and I told them that I wanted to buy an AR-15 rifle, and did they have one in stock? And he's like, nope. And I said, well, can you order me one? Nope, can't order it. And he was going to leave it at that. If I had hung up at that point, there would have been no explanation. But I pressed him on it, and I said, oh, wow, when did I fail the criminal background check? I need to get that looked into if that's what happened. He's like, well, why? Were you in the store and failed a background check? I said, no, but apparently if you won't sell me the gun, it must mean that I failed for it. At that point, he said, you want to talk to the manager, don't you? So they give me the manager, and we go through that conversation again. And to their credit, the employees at the local store were polite about it. They basically said, look, we've enacted this policy. We didn't make the decision, and would you like the corporate number? So they passed the buck. Well, I called Dick's corporate headquarters, and I got a lovely young lady named April, whose speech was so erudite, so cogent, that my editor wrote to me and said, is this word order correct? So I actually had to go back and check my tape of the conversation and say, yes, that is exactly what she said, because April, in her very incoherent way, tried to relate to me that they had made the decision out of respect for the families and during this national time of mourning to pull those rifles, quote-unquote, temporarily from the shelves. And when I tried to explain to her that I didn't believe treating law-abiding customers like criminals showed respect for anyone, much less the victims of a senseless tragedy like this, she became very agitated and at one point started interrupting me every time I tried to make my point, eventually started saying things, well, that's not the situation, sir. And I said, well, look, when you take a legal product, and I made her repeat to me that, oh, no, they're not illegal. I made her confirm that. I said, when you take a legal product off the shelves for no other reason than that it's politically incorrect, you're sending the message that you don't want my money, and you don't want the money of any law-abiding citizen who happens to believe in the Second Amendment. Well, that's not the situation, sir. And finally, she just said she would pass my dissatisfaction on up the chain to whoever her management is. Now, whether or not that complaint actually gets registered, I don't know, and it doesn't really matter. The point was not that anyone at Dick's management was going to go, well, gosh, that one guy in New York disapproves of our plan. What I was hoping, though, is that when word of this got out, just like with Cheaper Than Dirt on Twitter and on Facebook and in other social media areas, that we would take this movement to bring a consumer backlash to companies that would dare treat us like we're criminals before the fact. You certainly have the right not to cater to any market. You don't have to carry any particular item in inventory. But there have been other shootings. There have been other crimes during this period of time, and only now, when it was deemed the political hot-button issue of the day, did these companies start saying, well, suddenly we need to review our process. Cheaper Than Dirt said, we need to review our process for selling firearms before we can start selling them again, which prompts one to ask, well, what about your process was not in compliance with federal law before that you feel the need to change it? I just resent deeply being treated like a criminal, and I resent even more a horrible act of mass murder being exploited for political gain for no other reason than to enact policies that even President Obama admitted won't change anything.
That's right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. One of the points, I keep coming back to this seminal podcast that we did, but one of the points that Gene Kennedy makes is how humans, in their attempt to control or to appear to control the uncontrollable, that is life and what the vagaries of it, the unknowns, the mysteries that we all must face in life, how they pander to the fears of the moment by saying, well, we're going to do this. Now, I don't give Obama credit for much, but he did say nothing is going to prevent all of these events. But if we can prevent one, then it's worth it. Well, I guess you can debate that. But the point is that this is all salve on a wound. It's a very raw wound. And we've become, as a society, it seems to me, increasingly accustomed to being presumed guilty, like you mentioned about not being able to buy the weapon. Every time you get on an airplane, you have to prove you're innocent. You are not assumed to be an innocent traveler. You've got to empty your pockets. You've got to have every body cavity x-rayed to show that you don't have, that you're not guilty of trying to do something evil on the airplane. So there's been a lot of this in our society, and we've become accustomed to it step by step. Each one seems, well, you know, reasonable, certain limits on this or limits on that. And then when you look at the aggregate years later, it's, wow, we've given up a whole lot. I understand, having been in communications and politics, which is a bit of what Dix was doing, I understand the drive to appear sensitive, to say, well, now everybody should get one of these and we're going to profit on each one of them. But certainly in terms of the principal element, I agree with you 100%. It's a sad reality. I suspect in a month or two that we'll be right back to where we were before.
I was just going to say, just as I suspect
that this alleged campaign or assignment that President Obama has given Vice President Biden to do will blow away in the wind shortly, too.
I have a question I want to throw up for both Andrew, Phil, and you too, Annie. Here, do you feel the post 9/11 birth people are in middle school right now or right around there? Do you feel there'll be a constitutional type group which says, look, our constitutional rights are being thwarted, taken away by people that don't have permission, and start electing true, real constitutional conservatives? Or do you think it's more of a indoctrinated generation of dependence upon government? And the reason I ask that is if you look through revolutions, it's really generations that have come after the government takeover that have really changed things. Even in China, they tried to, in Tiananmen Square, it was basically a generation that had it of being squashed. We'll go with Andrew, and then we'll work our way down.
Well,
Annie, you're not backing out on this either. Annie, we're getting an answer out of you.
Well, you know, you make a wonderfully insightful point. I would tend to lean towards expectation of indoctrination, that my exposure to these educational institutions is that their political leanings and priorities are far from mine. And what I predict is that one of the things we're going to see come out of Newtown is a growth in the homeschooling movement.
Okay, that I would agree.
I take a more cynical view. I think that we saw in this last election, when a president this bad, presiding over an economy this bad, whose policies are this bad, whose perception as an arrogant, pompous jerk is this bad, can get elected and get elected easily. I think we've passed a tipping point where it's very hard for those few Americans left who are not dependent on government to overcome the ones who are. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe 2 years from now, the backlash will be greater and we'll see a tip to the other side. But I'm very concerned that we're going to see things get worse and not better. And I don't have a lot of faith. A good measure of the number of people in the country who understand the Constitution and who are of that bent is, who do you see at your local gun show? Because typically if a person is a gun owner, they subscribe to a certain worldview. And I used to be, years ago, I used to be the young guy at the gun shows. Now, at more than 40 years old, I'm still the young guy at the gun shows. There are a few people younger than me, but mostly what you see at gun shows are old men. And as those men die off, we are seeing generations of people who understand the Constitution and the ideals of liberty on which our Constitution and our country are based. They're fading away, and they're not being replaced. Their ranks are not being replenished. And we have our very messed up public school systems and a rotten cultural, popular culture, just decay to blame for that.
Well, I'm not exactly that. I've seen the generation where, yes, they've been indoctrinated. I had friends of mine. I've been talking to their kids. And a lot of things I talk to them about, basic things about the Constitution, our rights and liberties and our history, they were completely unaware of. You know, if they were taught it in school, it went in one ear and out the other. After talking to them, I've been able to, over time, show them the right side of things. And slowly I see them coming around. What I'm also seeing is a lot more homeschooling. I see a lot more charter schools opening up. People are going towards more of choice of education. And with that, I predict this upcoming, these kids that are now kindergarten kids and so forth, when they come of age, they will probably be far more conservative than the generation before, because the parents saw something wrong with the system and chose to change it as best as they can with the tools they have, hoping they can give those tools to their children. I believe that, yes, it's a tipping point, and I think this is where we are now tipping. Either one side, if they squash free choice of schools, then it's going to go directly towards the Obamacrat. If it allows it to increase, it's going to start slowly tipping onto ours. It won't be fast. It'll take more than a generation, but I see it starting to go the other way. We're not the majority yet, you know. But we also have had Thomas hold it on the phone right now for about 17 minutes. Thomas, you're on the air live with us. Thomas? Okay.
I'm here.
Okay. You've been patiently waiting.
Welcome.
And Thomas just dropped off. I think Thomas's Skype is acting up again.
We're going to have to get him, I told you, a cell phone for Christmas. He's always dropping off. But my approach is very... Here's just an educated guess. I tend to think that there's going to come a certain point where these indoctrinated kids will have had it. And I think we're going to see, I think we're in an era similar to 1929, where, like it or not like it, Herbert Hoover was perceived as an idiot, a complete moron. And in many, many ways, I don't mean this offense to you in any way either, Andrew, but... other than a handful of Republicans like Karl Rove and others, George Bush was perceived as an idiot. And the bottom line is, these people worship Obama, who is 50 times the dumbest president that I can remember. And he's also not even a good liar. But I think we're going to a stage to where we're going to hit even worse times. And once those people get to be in their mid-20s, that will be the end. They'll just have had it with... Who knows what will take place from there? But I think the ultimate is going to be when they really try to take away guns. And what we're not going to see is kids, but similar to what you said about the gun shows, we're going to see people that are in their Phil, I think, said this. We're going to see people, veterans, who are going to come to the forefront, who have sworn allegiance to the Constitution, and hopefully we'll have some sort of, I don't think we'll see a drastic change, but we'll see kind of like a Battle of Athens, where the government is going to have to concede, because I say that because the alternative would be unthinkable. But it's not unthinkable. That's what formed this country. And that's, I think for now, we're just stuck. We have too many spineless Americans that don't want to do anything. And realistically, the GOP is almost like half Democrat, half Republican, only by name. The conservatives are just not out there. They're squashed. Sorry, I kind of went on there, but we'll throw it back to Andrew.
All right, we also have Thomas back. Let me bring Thomas back on. Thomas?
Sure.
Hey, Annie, how are you?
Okay. And you're coming?
You can hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes. I actually have a two-part question.
Thomas dropped again. He's got Skype, and I think you're right about getting him a cell phone. But, Andrew, you were going to reply to what Mike said.
Well, I would just point out that the standard media approach for generations to Republicans is that they're all idiots, Calvin Coolidge and Herbert Hoover. There was a long gap there when there weren't any Republicans. Then we come up to Dwight Eisenhower, and a lot of people say, well, you know, all he did was play golf. And Richard Nixon was evil. Jerry Ford was a bumbler. Remember, he fell on the airplane steps like any other human being might have. And then you come to Ronald Reagan, who was just a stupid actor who ended the Cold War. And George W. Bush, the cover on Newsweek magazine, was the wimp factor. And then George W. Bush, and all they could do was take pictures of his funny faces and whatever. And make fun of him. John McCain, remember, he couldn't run a BlackBerry. Well, they never bothered to say he couldn't run a BlackBerry because his fingers had been broken so many times being a tortured POW that he can't really control them. But that didn't fit the narrative. This is a historical thing that Republicans are portrayed that way. It's very sad. On the other hand, there's been some very strong stories portrayed over time about what Democrats are, and I think if there is hope in the current situation, and I'm still in the stage of wondering whether there is, but if there is hope, it would come from people like Obama overplaying their hand. And I hope that the memories of what real freedom and constitutionalism are and what independence are, that I hope that survives enough so that there will be an upcoming generation that remembers them and wants to take them back. I'm not so sure. You know, 47% of Americans don't pay any taxes, and they made fun of Romney for saying that, but that's the truth. And 2% of Americans pay 45% of the taxes, and yet Obama says they need to pay their fair share. Well, I don't know, 2%, 45%, that seems like a pretty big fair share to me, and now he wants them to pay a little bit more. So if there are, but I'm older, and so I'm accustomed, or I remember, times where this was not the case, where we weren't pitted against each other by someone who, remember in the Bible, they say that when the devil comes, he'll be all, or she will be all attractive and beautiful and tempting. And I think to many people's eyes, Obama is just that. He's very attractive. He gives people things. He's a great talker. Or used to be, and he promised a lot of things, and then when he doesn't deliver, people go, oh, well, it was somebody else's fault. And so instead of taking responsibility, which was drilled into me as a kid, my father would stand there with me until I fessed up. He knew, and there I could tell, I could share some stories about times that I had done something that was not good, and I now know he knew it, and he waited until I came forward with it to admit it. So that was the way that generation of the 40s and 50s were raised. But I'm afraid that the parenting that's going on now in many homes, too many, is doesn't teach, you know, the old country song about if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything.
Absolutely. And, you know, you had mentioned before about Obama playing his hand, showing his hand too strongly. You know, I think that is the problem that the left is starting to find, because after this, you know, tragedy here in Sandy Hook, you had Eric Loomis, who's a professor at the University of Rhode Island, called for the beheading of the NRA CEO, Wayne LaPierre.
Really?
It's funny how liberal calls for murder are always ignored.
That's amazing.
Now,
I hadn't heard that one.
No, he said, I now want Wayne LaPierre's head on a stick. He tried to walk it back, and that didn't work. But this coward ended up deleting his Twitter account because of the backlash. And then you have now actress Marg, I'm going to say her last name wrong, Helgenberger. She plays on CSI Los Angeles. She and author Joyce Carol Oates were calling for the shooting of NRA members. And now suddenly everything is that happened up there in Connecticut is the fault of the NRA. Instead of saying it's the fault of, you know, number one, a parent that has a mentally ill child who collects guns, something's wrong there between mother and child.
I think the person I would want to shoot if I was Marge Helfenberger would be my plastic surgeon. I don't know if you've seen a close-up of her recently, but,
direct hit. My friend, I have to agree with you. I'm a looker. I love females. Geez, she about cracked my monitor. But here again. Oh, that was a great point, by the way, of the portrayal of Republican presidents. I had never looked at that. I personally don't have a lot of love for George Bush, so he's the only one I agree with. But that's very true. Calvin Coolidge, who was very prosperous during the Roaring Twenties. I mean, he was obviously. But yeah, I think you are correct. But when is anybody going to get on TV and simply say, look, Jane Doe or John Doe, whoever robs a bank, kills whatever, they're responsible, period. I mean, the last time I can think of a responsible gun owner or just a responsible human being who walked into anything and did damage to anybody, it simply never existed. Also, and I don't know if anyone's aware of it, the dummy of the month has to be the person on Tuesday who went into the gun store and tried to rob it. Yeah, you're going into a gun store during the holidays with a gun? Hello? They took care of him real fast. Anyone in gun stores know how to use guns? I think we just simply don't say, look, Andrew Malcolm did this. Andrew Malcolm is responsible. Phil did this. He's responsible. Hold Annie accountable for her act. We just don't say that anymore. It's always there's a reason why Cool Mike did something stupid. I mean,
yeah. Well, we don't do personal responsibility in this country anymore. There is this cultural push now as part of the whole anti-bullying crusade that if someone kills themselves, and we saw this in the recent controversy over that radio talk show, they made a prank call to the Kate Middleton's hospital room, and then the nurse killed herself, and clearly it was the prank phone call that was to blame. Well, we have this trend now in society where we're trying to pass anti-bullying laws that would actually put people in jail if other people whom they are perceived to have bullied kill themselves. Well, I can't think of an act that is more the embodiment of personal responsibility than taking your own life. You are murdering yourself. You are the end in the beginning, and you are therefore personally responsible. And yet we've reached the point now where even that is blamed on someone else. And if they manage to enshrine that as law, look out, because that is a slippery slope.
Yeah, that is true. And Andrew had mentioned a couple of incidents with the cases with police officers. And I don't know if he knew I am a retired NYPD officer. And one of the things I would always face when you turn around and ask someone, why'd you do it? Oh, well, that made me do it, or this made me do it. And I said, well, didn't you have a choice? You chose to actually wake up in the morning, put your clothes on, go out on the street, and attack this person. You made the choice. No one else made that decision for you. You made that choice. They cannot answer. And it drives me nuts. I mean, I have an older brother who happens to be a cried-in-the-wall liberal. And his argument whenever he got into a fight with my parents was, well, I didn't ask to be born. I turned around to one day and I says, did any of us ask to be born? But we take responsibility for our lives now.
And whatever happened to the fact of I didn't ask to be born? Well, you know what? Tough shit. You're here and you were. Done. This conversation is terminated.
I have a friend in New York who was tells a wonderful story about having been picked for jury duty and expecting to get off because he was a journalist and they don't like journalists. But he didn't. He was on the jury pool, and it was a case involving a man, this is some years ago, who walked up to a guy was walking down the street with his boombox, big fancy radio on his shoulder, and a guy walked up to him and said, "Give it to me." And the guy said no. And so there was a fight, and the guy took the boombox and ran away, and they had a description, and the police caught the thief. Well, my friend said, you know, to himself, this is pretty obvious, so it's going to be an easy thing. So they got into the jury room, and the jury was talking, and clearly the mood of the room was coming around to blame the victim. My friend said, "Wait a minute, whoa. Why is it the guy's fault with the boombox?" And they said, "Well, he could have avoided the whole thing by just giving the guy his boombox. They didn't have to have this whole case and arrest." And you know,
but
the guy
still
who,
fact.
I know the guy who stole it. You know, he didn't have much, and all he was asking for was the boombox. He didn't want to hurt the guy, and so my friend got so outraged, he appointed himself jury foreman. And led them to a conviction, but you know, he said that had he just sat by passively, the mood of the room was the easy way out was to blame the victim and let's get out of here and let the guy go. It's amazing to me.
How the hell are you supposed to know this guy who doesn't have anything? I mean, what do you? I assume this is ridiculous. I mean, blame anyone but the. Blame anybody but the party that is responsible.
No, you're absolutely right. And we need parents. Sadly, and this is not a phenomenon confined to any particular sector of society, but there are an awful lot of people in our society who are raised in single-parent families. And I was for a time a single parent. I know how difficult it is. You do your best, but you know what? There's a reason why it takes two people to make a child, and that is because it takes two people to raise a child, no matter how good you are at it and how devoted. In most cases, it's the male who's absent. And guess what? Our president didn't have a strong male in his upbringing. And so it's not surprising to me that a lot of Americans grow up without a strong male figure who says, no, shut up. Who did this? And makes you confront the fact that it was you and to take responsibility yourself and not to blame the fact that everybody else was doing it.
Amen to that. Phil, you want to chime in?
There's not much I can say to that. I don't want to sound like the voice of doom and gloom and, you know, the end times and everything, because I honestly don't think everything is that bad. But it has been a very grim few weeks, and especially here in New York, which is as liberal a state as states get. There is this feeling that, you know, we're constantly surrounded and under siege by the elements of this cultural blight that we're talking about. Fact that our culture is doing very poorly, that elements within it are destroying ideals like personal responsibility and all the attendant virtues that go with that, the things that build a free nation. We live in a free nation where the government tells you what light bulbs you can buy, how much water can be in your toilet tank, how many miles to the gallon your car must get, and soon what doctor you can see and how often you can see them. We're running racial ads now in this state that make fun of people for going to the hospital because their illness isn't serious enough to warrant going to the emergency room. The point of the ad is to try and discourage people from going to the emergency room because all of the people who don't have insurance are costing too much money. Well, a friend of mine died December the 1st last year because he was having a heart attack and he did not go to the hospital because he did not have insurance, he did not want to accept charity, and he was stubborn. He might be alive today if he had been encouraged to go rather than to not go. And yet, because we live in a world where our president wants to take over healthcare, we're seeing this trend towards, oh, no, don't use those resources. That's for somebody else. No, I'm sorry. If you're sick, go get help and worry about the fall later.
Now, amen to that. That I completely agree with, having suffered a couple of cardiac incidents myself, and thankfully I do have insurance, but What you see also, though, is people go into the emergency room. You see welfare recipients encouraged to go into the emergency room for something as simple as a cold. And instead of teaching people the difference between a medical emergency and a regular visit, and they're not doing that. They're not separating the wheat from the chaff. Now, we got our friend Thomas trying to call in one more time. Let's see if we can get Thomas back on the air. Thomas, are you with us? Thomas, your connection is awful. You're breaking up badly. Okay, I think we're losing Thomas again. We lost Thomas again.
It was a very dissatisfied burst of white noise.
You know, Annie is no different. You're no different than a teenager, Annie, in the hospital. You see all these pictures posted on Facebook of these kids that are in the... Annie's texting me, you two, and she's telling me she's being taken in for maybe some heart problems or whatever. And I'm like, oh, my God, when did you get admitted? Annie says, I'm in the ambulance now being taken to the hospital. I'm like, they're texting while you're getting while this is going on? It's like, oh, Lord, no different than a teenager. Can't have cardiac arrest without your cell phone and your text messages there in hand. The only thing missing was a picture. Sending me a picture.
A famed mixed martial arts fighter, one of the Gracie brothers, actually was mugged on the streets of New York City. He beat his attacker to the ground and was using his phone to take pictures and live tweet the event as he was standing over the prone form of the attacker. I think that has to have all of those stories beat. I think you get some sort of medal in life when you can not only defeat a mugging, but actually take the time to Twitter to your friends about it.
Everybody got to have a little bit of their fame, you know, their networking fame there. Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, you name it. That would be a whole – can you imagine being the mugger, his friend saying, man, that dude got his ass whooped.
Well, not only that, but how bad is your luck? The guy you choose to mug is somebody like that.
That's like that idiot who went into the to rob the gun store. I mean, I'm thinking –
yes, actually. They're all part
who
of –
who in their right mind – would rob a gun store, even if there's just one customer in there. You don't think he or she knows how to use a gun?
Like, well, you know, I used to go to a little gun store in upstate New York called the Appletown Gun Shop, and the proprietor, who has since passed away, was this elderly fellow with a big handlebar mustache who always wore a gun right on his hip for all the world to see. And we got into a conversation once. This was years and years ago, and I told him, I'm like, you know, I don't know. I can't afford to go to jail. I'm a productive citizen. If they said we're going to take the guns away, I think I would comply. I mean, what if I get married? What if I have a wife? And what do I do? I think I would comply. He looks at me and he says, "Well, that's fine until they come for your wife." And I will always remember that. I will always remember his attitude. And I don't know if in those few words he understood what a profound effect that had on me, at least, and maybe other people that he had similar conversations with. We need to stand up to abrogations of our civil rights. If we don't, we're going to end them.
I think that's accurate. You know, how many times when we were kids did we listen, some words went through our ears, maybe coming from a person who we considered crazy old woman or senile old man or whatever, towards when the ages, as we got older, those words meant a hell of a lot more and taught us, that person knew exactly what they were talking about. It happens all the time.
It's funny.
Right.
I want to go back to where you had how people have an effect on others' lives. I was sent with a prisoner to the hospital. The woman was pregnant. She was going into labor, and I was supposed to stand guard over her in the maternity ward. Well, she was a junkie. And she's screaming. She's crying for medications to dull her pain and this and that. And there's other women who paid to have their babies in the hospital all around her. And she's screaming so loud that she's disturbing the rest of these women. And after she's carrying on for about half an hour, I walked up to her. I must have cursed her out a bloody blue storm and told her what made her think she was better than any other woman in the maternity ward. They're having their babies, and they're not causing as much of a fuss. They're paying for their hospital stay. The state is paying for yours, so shut the bleeping up. And you know what? She did. And I didn't see the woman, but about 2 years later, I'm walking through the projects. This woman comes walking up to me. She's got gorgeous, luxurious black hair, a rosy complexion, a beautiful child. She goes, "Officer, you don't remember me." And I'm looking at her like, you know, I don't know you from Adam. I didn't recognize her at all. It was the same woman, the junkie. Because of what I said to her that day when she gave birth, she cleaned up her act, she got it together, and she was raising her child on her own, drug-free. And, you know, it's amazing what something you say you don't realize has an effect on other people.
Well, when I grew up in I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and when I grew up, everybody in the neighborhood who was an adult was a parent, and they were my parents. There was a sense of community that if I was running through somebody else's garden, a neighbor would come out and stop me and scold me, even though it wasn't his garden and I wasn't his child. I don't think that's going to happen these days. I sort of understand why. I don't know all of my neighbors, and there is not that sense of community and that sense of community responsibility that we're all responsible. You know, even the little things, like you see someone walking down the street picking up a piece of blowing paper and putting it in the trash can because it's his community and he wants to keep it a little cleaner. Well, picking up is somebody else's job. We sort of shuffle these things off, typically onto government. And now, you know, there's even the food stamp program, which is more than 50% larger under Obama, letting someone else, let the government help feed people. And of course, they're taking advantage of it. Especially the ones who don't necessarily need the help, but it's there, so you know why not? We all pay for it, and nobody else is enforcing it or making it seem like, you know, wouldn't it be better if you learned how to fish rather than get someone to hand you a fish for food today?
Yeah, it's free. You remember that guy that was on TV a couple of years back? He wore the jacket with all the question marks on it, saying free government money.
Yes.
Well, hello, not free. That's my money going to you. I would like to have it back in my pocket. You want to say something,
Phil? Fellow was sued, or I think he met with either criminal charges or civil lawsuit. That's why you don't see those ads anymore. I'm not certain of that, so please don't hold me to that, but I believe there was some fallout for how he conducted his business.
Yeah, well, he had this big, thick volume. But if you called the government, you know, something like Pueblo something or other, you could have gotten a pamphlet. The government would have sent you a pamphlet for free. Trying one last time with Thomas. Thomas, can you try this one last time?
Annie, can you hear me okay?
We got you finally, Thomas. It only took the entire show.
Yeah, well, I had to uninstall Skype, reinstall Skype, pull the piece out of my U.S.
Thomas, it didn't work.
I guess we're not going to hear him. It's the end of that story.
Jeez.
You know, it is amazing how it for me, I was not around 50 years ago, but I can at least say our founding fathers were so smart when a president of any party or a political figure of any party opened their mouth, most of the people were like, before you even say anything, it's a lie. Now it's just like what they say is just they follow the idiot. It's the people who see lead the blind.
In Obama's case, though, you know he's telling a more egregious lie when he starts to stutter.
True. I noticed that. Whenever he's faltering without his teleprompters, without the TOTUS, the POTUS is a liar.
Obama has to be the worst liar I've ever heard of any president whatsoever. I mean, he's not even a decent liar. That's going to be the next thing for candidates. They're going to teach him, you know, you have, they pre-teach you how to be on TV. They pre-teach you how to address people. They're now going to have to pre-teach you how to lie.
Many people don't know this, but for fans of Harry Potter out there, President Obama is actually a parcel mouth. If you listen, he hisses whenever there's an S at the end of any word.
He certainly pissed off at Romney at that first debate, boy. See, too bad the Chicago boy never learned how to put use a gun. He could have capped him right there, ended all his problems.
When you reach that level, you have people for that. You don't shoot people yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we suspect that Obama has people because a couple of his close associates from college and his state congressional days have disappeared under circumstances that were not exactly kosher. You know,
Hillary managed to develop an inner ear problem.
yeah, it's called no brains.
Well, she didn't want it to develop into the Vince Foster disease. So she probably scrams fast.
It's like that old joke, how many informants does it take to fall down a flight of stairs? He fell. Nobody pushed him. He fell.
Speaking of our Secretary of State, have you heard that Obama has now nominated John Kerry as Secretary of Defense? Secretary of Defense. Just before airtime, yes.
I heard Obama's glowing introduction about what a great and respected politician John Kerry was and how he helped usher in normalized relations with Vietnam and how he had the respect of his fellow Congress critters in Washington and nothing. I mean, because he was speaking off the teleprompter, he wasn't stuttering left and right, but just the lies were thick and vile.
They forget that he threw his medals away when he came back home, and then he had the audacity to give false testimony before Congress against his fellow soldiers in Vietnam. He led a lot of major anti-war protests. He was the Jane Fonda of Massachusetts.
Absolutely. And we redefined the definition of lying when John Kerry ran for president. Lying, or swift voting, as it is popularly called, is telling the truth about any Democrat's career. That is what lying is now.
Well, I expect the swift voters are going to be popping up very, very soon. I don't know if you caught Lindsey Graham. I believe it was on Fox News Sunday. He stated that he would not oppose the Kerry nomination. And the reason being is that he's a world traveler. Excuse me, I used to own a travel agency. I've traveled the world. That makes me eligible to be Secretary of Defense or Secretary of State.
I'm pretty sure the Gangnam Style guy qualifies too.
There's a great, as you know, probably, there's a great so-called courtesy in the Senate where they take care of each other as... Actually, they do in many professions, doctors and lawyers and others. But in the Senate's case, it will be a very, I predict, a very easy confirmation process as the Secretary of State for John Kerry. And then, of course, that opens up a Senate seat in Massachusetts. I see Ben Affleck is making noises about trying to win the Democratic primary for that position.
The thing to remember there is the stupidest actors are always the best actors because there's nothing to get in the way of the role.
True. But speaking of Ben Affleck, Heritage Foundation was testifying in front of Congress about the Democratic Republic of Congo, something going on about corruption in the government and other bullshit over there. Excuse my language. But guess who testified side by side with the Heritage Foundation? It was Ben Affleck.
See, I would have thinking with her. One of the stars of the movie Congo would have had as much credibility to me.
Yeah.
I'm very concerned about the artificially intelligent ape problem in the Congo.
Since when did that guy go to the Congo? I mean, when was he partying in the Congo? You know, the only thing that keeps me sane about all these Republicans that drive me crazy is knowing that the Democrats are 10 times as insane. It is just an assumed norm that not only these people are pathological liars, but I don't know what the word is for it, but they never tell the truth. I mean,
the word for that is Democrat.
Correct. Amen. I mean, I was here in Michigan. We have an issue with this Republican governor who signed bills in the middle of the night. So I talked to a Democrat. I wanted to know And all this person's trying to do is convert me. I'm thinking, this conversation's done. Goodbye. I'm thinking, okay, yeah, obviously wrong is wrong. But, I mean, instead of addressing the issue of the problem, here's are some of the things you can do as a resident of this district. I'm just trying to convert you. I'm thinking, this is the problem with America. It's, people are just not focused on what you said. Your neighborhood grassroots, where if Mrs. Jones gave you an ass-kicking, you keep your mouth shut and hope Mrs. Jones didn't tell your mom or dad because you knew another one was on the way.
Well, I have to leave the line, but if I could leave you with something pursuant to that topic, remember, right is right, wrong is wrong, left is also wrong and probably worse.
Absolutely. Thank you, Phil. Thank you for the call in. And I did post a link to your article on World Net Daily. It's called My Phone Call to Dick's Sporting Goods. It was excellent. I was hysterical about that.
Yes, and I wrote them while you were talking. I emailed them. I was not aware of it. We have two stores within basically 10 minutes of where I live.
Yeah, I think we've got one down in Savannah, and I think there's another one out in Charleston. They definitely are going to be hearing from me. But one last thing, Andrew. This is right up your alley. Have you heard that Bloomberg is looking to buy the Financial Times, the New York Times?
Well, there's two separate things, Financial Times or New York Times. Which one do you mean?
All right. I'm looking at the article right now. It's saying the Financial Times.
Yeah.
And all right, now USA reports that the New York Times itself is a Bloomberg acquisition target. He's looking at both.
Yeah. Well, there was talk about Rupert Murdoch moving on the New York Times and so on. That's virtually impossible for somebody to do. I suppose anything is possible these days, given the fiscal or the financial straits that many print operations are in. But the New York Times has a two-tiered layer of stock, and it's Class A that's traded, and you can get an awful lot of Class A, but Class B is the one that the family still owns. So unless you get the third generation of family getting dumping their stock, I don't think it's going to happen unless management agrees to it. So it won't be a hostile takeover. But, you know, anything is possible. We've seen consolidations in the media business over the years that we never would have expected. Many of them, like AOL and et cetera, have not turned out so well. Let's see, Comcast took over NBC, Universal, and we'll see how that turns out. CNN is in trouble. They've got a new head there, Jeff Zucker, who used to run NBC. So there's sort of musical chairs, and they're trying to sort out and find their way in this Darwinian financial world. And I think we'll see a lot more consolidation, a lot more victims. Remember the Chicago Tribune Company, which owns 23 television stations, the Los Angeles Times, and many other properties. They're still in bankruptcy and have been for 3 years. So it's a very difficult time for them, having come out of decades of monopoly operation. I hope that some of the larger ones survive because they are the originators of a lot of news, which the rest of us end up chewing over. And
what's it like, Andrew, having done this for so long, almost seeing a large part of your career and livelihood, like just kind of, I don't know if the word is disintegrate, but it transforms more into an internet thing where people are not dropping the 50 cents into the machine or, you know,
right,
there's not a guy at the corner selling the newspapers and you know you. What's that like?
Well, you know, it's like asking a fish, what does the water taste like? I mean, it's the only thing you know, I noticed maybe 10 years ago, a little bit less. I had four children, and they were all educated, clothed, fed, traveled, born in most cases, insured, cared for, and educated in college by earnings from a newspaper. And yet not one of those four read a newspaper. And I said to myself that there was something fundamentally changing. And back, about 6 years ago, a little bit late compared to some of my colleagues, but better late than never. I got fascinated by the whole online world, and I switched over to that. The LA Times, to its credit, asked me to design a conservative newspaper political blog that I would want to write. So I did, thinking, well, they're not going to buy this, but they did. The only thing they talked about was the name of it, which I could care less about. So I ran that for them. We turned out with my teammates on that operation. We had great success as sort of the lone conservative voice at the LA Times, and that's why Investors Business Daily came to me about a year and a half ago and invited me over there. That's a very conservative place, very thoughtful, bunch of smart people. And guess this, it's a print operation that is profitable. They have strange things like bonuses for writers who attract a lot of readers. Can you imagine such a thing in a capitalist system? They're not in bankruptcy. So it's a wonderful place. And as I said earlier, it's investors.com/AndrewMalcolm. And I hope a lot of people will come and at least try out the column. We try to be unpredictable and tell a little bit about how politics, well, a lot about how politics works from inside, having been both in journalism and politics and government. I can see what they're doing. I wrote one just the other day called The Benghazi Report, How Smoothly Washington Washes Away Its Scandals. And that's there on my column now, showing the intricate step-by-step. It's a bipartisan ballet that Washington goes through to appear to address these scandals. The Benghazi, of course, on 9/11, the killing of the four Americans, and then the cover-up of what happened, the blaming of the video, the appointing of an independent, allegedly, commission, which, of course, can't finish its report before the election, so nobody can have it to make judgments on. The report comes out, but the report comes out at 7 o'clock on a weeknight just before the holidays, so people will ignore it. It doesn't blame anyone in particular. Four people die. No one's fired. No one's reprimanded. No one's disciplined. Hillary Clinton can't go to Congress to talk about it because she hit her head on something. Maybe she can do it again in the future, which is what she's been saying all fall. She was in Asia the first time they invited her. She just happened to be over there. It's just a colossal ballet of bamboozling that goes on. And this is what I try to do in my column, is explain how these things work, having been up close and watching them. I hope a lot of people will come, and I appreciate the opportunity to meet your audience too, Annie.
Oh, this has been fantastic. We're down to our last 2 minutes, and this show has gone so fast, I swear. Andrew, you have been a fantastic guest, and I am going to invite you back again next year.
Okay, fine. That's a deal.
Yeah. Andrew,
thank you
so
much.
I also think some other BTR shows would love to have you as a guest. I mean, your insight into not just yesterday, but the vision for today is, something I think, and I'll make sure we pass their email along so they can possibly. Whereabouts are you as far as you live?
Well, I live outside Los Angeles, and
okay, so 3-hour time zone. That would be great for the East Coast. They could have you on their late night shows as well.
I do enjoy these, as long as we can get the word out that it's investors.com/AndrewMalcolm. We want people to come, and we've got now almost 108,000 followers on Twitter and about 37,000 on Facebook. We've got a great little community going there, back and forth, lots of direct messages and retweets, and a real community watching this political show unfolding and maybe even spurring some people to take some constitutionally framed action.
Absolutely.
All righty. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much, Andrew, and Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you very much. Happy holidays to you and everybody out there. Appreciate the opportunity. Bye.
Bye.
All right.
Well,
Andrew,
we're going to wrap it for the year. Andrew Malcolm, everybody, thank you so much. God, that guy is awesome. I mean, he's just
yes.
He is a smart dude.
just reminding everyone, go to our website, southernscents.webs.com. Our show calendar is up there. This is our last show for the year. We will be back July 4th with the former CIA operative Mike Baker, who's also now a contributor to Fox News. So until then, everyone, have a very blessed Christmas, a happy Hanukkah, and we will see you next year. How's that?
Amen. That's awesome.
Amen, and God bless to you all. Thank you for being so fantastic.
Yep. See you on the 1st. Or no, wait, 4th.
The 4th.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American.